Welcome to the inaugural Pittsburgh Comics Red Chair Dialogues, something I'm going to try today just to be goofy. Saturdays are typically mishmash. I never know what to expect, and today's supposed to be bad weather, so I don't know how busy I'll be. But a lot of times I have some of my regulars come by, and we just sit and talk for a while, and I thought, you know, these are some of the best conversations that I like listening to, or, you know, enjoying talking, just free flow of ideas. I like this, I didn't like that, so I figured I'd record some of that today, if anybody comes by. But since it's just before opening here and nobody's here, I've been reading a lot lately, shockingly, and I figured I'd do some reviews. Just, probably be easier for me to do them verbally than try to sit down and actually get it all typed out and edited and find the covers and get it all posted. It might take me a couple weeks, and I figured might as well get this stuff out now. So I just have a stack of books, and I'm in no particular order, just whatever order they're in. I'm just going to kind of talk about them. First one's Grifter. I read issues 4 and 5 last night, and this is really one of my guilty pleasures. I know nothing about the character before this started. I strangely was out of comics in the beginning of Image. I just graduated from college, had no money, and if I did buy anything, it was few and far between, and I really, you know, didn't have any stores I was going to. So I missed the whole launch of Image, so I have no idea who this character was. And even after the first two issues, I really didn't care. And then issue 3 did something. I think I've told people before, but they had the little blurb that told you everything you needed to know about the character. And just to give you, I'll read it to you. It says, from special ops soldier to con artist, from con artist to the most wanted man in the universe, Cole Cash wears the mask that aliens fear. He is the hunter and the hunted. He is Grifter. Well, that explained a whole lot more. First two issues never explained why he wore the mask. It just seemed very, very odd. I understand Grifter, you know, criminal, but it didn't, nothing made sense. Why are these aliens after him? Things like that. But that little sentence even, or two sentences, told me everything I need to know about the character and explained things. And from then on, I really liked it. It's basically almost like a spy thriller, but instead of the evil corporation trying to get the guy, it's aliens. It's just him on the run trying to stop them. But it's just been a really fun book. I don't know if the art changed in these last two issues. It may not have. It just seemed a little different. Mostly it's the backgrounds. I noticed when they switched artists on Mr. Terrific, this looks like the same kind of backgrounds where it's realistic, photoshopped. Not a big fan of it. Other than that, the story's good. It definitely left you on a cliffhanger, and as soon as the next one comes out, it'll probably be back to the top of the pile. Next up, Demon Knights. This has been a book that... Oh, sorry, going back, real quick, going back to Grifter. There was an interesting exchange. I had told a couple people about this. One day it just kind of hit me that the Daemonites, who are the bad guys in a lot in this book, and Voodoo, and some other books, and then you also have the title Demon Knights. And I'm like, wait a minute. That's too easy. Did they just put that right in front of us and nobody caught it? And then in issue 4, Grifter, he's talking to Green Arrow, basically saying, you have to let me go, I have to stop the Daemonites. And then afterwards, Ollie's talking to one of his assistants saying, get me all the information you can on Demon Knights, with the two words instead. So he misheard it, so that tells me they are pronounced the same, and maybe there is something more to just my thoughts. But back to Demon Knights 4. I forgot to take 5 home, so I'll be reading that tonight. But number 4 was the origin of Shining Knight, which was very interesting. I'd read Shining Knight, I think I first introduced to it in, I believe it was Morrison's Seven Soldiers, if it's the same character, which I think it is. But just very neat. Very neat telling the origin, giving her reason for living, her why she's doing what she's doing. This one also, not too much, it didn't involve the current story too much, other than the very beginning and the very end. The whole middle was her story. But it had a very interesting ending, which made no sense or may explain a traitor, things like that. So I really wanted to read number 5 and was sad I didn't have it. So that one's still going long. If you've been liking it, I think it's still good. If you wanted to try it, it's a good, you know, it's a medieval story. You know, Merlin appears in this one. It's that kind of thing. So if that's your cup of tea, you might enjoy it and want to give it a try. Next up, Red Lanterns number 4. Again, forgot number 5. Maybe I didn't grab it because I hadn't read 4 yet. This one's really just not grabbing me. I know a lot of people aren't liking it. It's emo. Just a whole lot of back and forth. They gave the origin of two of the characters, two of the Red Lanterns. Ratchet and... I forget the other guy's name. Sorry. And had a little bit more of Atrocitus, you know, going... He came to Earth and committed his rage on someone. And it's setting up the Earth Red Lantern. But yeah, this is one that's... It's not a top-of-pile read. It's one of those I read when I get to it. I read Aquaman 4 and 5. That was a lot of fun. Another character that, you know... Nobody really cared about Aquaman for the longest time. And when this relaunched, the first issue was really good, you know, setting up, dispelling a lot of the myths, saying, no, I don't talk to fish. Yes, I eat fish. Kind of setting up his origin while this, you know, re-energizing the character. And then the next couple issues, I really didn't feel did anything. Didn't move much. Wasn't a whole lot to it. But issue 4, I thought, was really good, explaining who the trench monsters were. And then delving into a little bit more, some old Atlantis stuff. And then number 5 was neat, where he's trying to catch somebody and ends up in the desert, has a hallucination where he's talking to his father to talk about acceptance and what it is he really wants. And then delves more into this old Atlantis mystery. So there's a lot there to like. There's a lot there to want to keep writing. You can tell this is a story that's going to go on for a while. And in a good way. It's got layers. There's different things going on. So I think Johns is doing a good run on this. Ivan Reis' art is beautiful, so I'm really glad he's doing it. Next up, Justice League 5. Well, finally got moving. Lots of good stuff in this. Lots of good action. We have Omega Beams. We have Darkseid. We have Parademons. I guess I can give a little spoilers. All of a sudden, Superman gets taken, and Batman has to track him down. Green Lantern finally shows some, I don't want to say courage or guts, but he's doing what he should be doing. I like Wonder Woman's portrayal. Not a whole lot of Flash, a little bit of Cyborg. Batman reveals himself in the book to Green Lantern, who basically says, "Who are you?" Which was kind of interesting. I did find one thing kind of interesting. At one point, Batman kind of starts disrobing. I'm not sure why exactly, where he takes off his hood and his cape, but he also takes off his logo off the top of the front of his shirt, which I just found very, very odd. Maybe they'll come back and they'll explain that in issue 6. One thing I did not like about it, now I didn't count the story pages, but typically these are having the backup stuff that you're paying a dollar extra for, and I have to say the backup stuff in this one was really kind of poor. It was just a sketchbook of 2 pages of Wonder Woman, and none of it was really drawn by Lee. The one was drawn by... It's the Cliff Chang cover. Then Aquaman, drawn by Ivan Reis, and Cyborg. For a dollar, I kind of expect more. And I didn't count the story pages, so there may have been more story pages, but just kind of expecting more at the end. Secret Avengers 21.1, the introduction of Hawkeye to the team, into the Secret Avengers. I've been talking with people about this one. I guess you could say it's not that I'm not a big fan of Hawkeye. It just, he seems out of nowhere. All of a sudden he's everywhere, and they've changed his costume, making him look just like the guy in the movie, which I'm not a big fan of. The movies can be separate from the books. I'd much rather see Hawkeye in his standard archer costume. I always liked the mask and the everything. It seemed to add, you know, gave him flair, where this is just basically looks like a paramilitary outfit with nothing too exciting. The basic idea of the book is, not to give everything away, but Cap is testing Hawkeye to see if he's ready to lead the Secret Avengers. Cap's saying that he's too busy to lead the team anymore, so he's looking for someone to take over, and he's tapped Hawkeye. And it's just interesting that he puts him through this test when he's known Hawkeye for years. Not that Hawkeye was one of the earliest Avengers, but he's been around with the Avengers for a very long time, and they should know each other pretty well. I found it funny that he says that Cap says he needs someone to take over the Secret Avengers because he was too busy, when actually when he started it, he was the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. and he was the super soldier. He wasn't even Captain America at that time. So I just find it funny, unless maybe because now he's leading the Avengers again, that's taking his time to, he can't do the Secret Avengers. But I'm pretty sure he was in the Avengers when they restarted. Or maybe it was Bucky Cap. I can't remember. Not a bad story. It introduces some characters that we haven't seen for a while in Secret Avengers, due to all the Fear Itself tie-in stuff and the Ellis stuff. So that was kind of nice, bringing it back to some of that. And then it's, you know, next issue showing Hawkeye takes the lead. So obviously he passed the test. My only concern is that it's going to, I think it's showing he's taking over in issue 22, and I think issue 24 or 25 is going to be a, is going to start tying into AVX, which is proudly proclaimed on the cover. So I just hope Remender doesn't start on something here and then loses his way due to the tie-ins. I also hope Remender can do three monthly books, because X-Force has been good. And people have been enjoying Venom. I wasn't a big fan of Venom. I tried the first couple issues, and it just didn't hook me. I couldn't quite follow the whole Kraven the Hunter storyline, where it kind of felt like I was jumping in the middle, and I couldn't get my bearings on what was going on, and I didn't find enough attachment to make me want to keep reading that one. So still going through the pile. iVampire number 5. This one I enjoyed a great deal. This has been a real surprise book. Lots of people don't like vampires. Lots of people, this is more of a Vertigo-style book, which aren't the bestsellers. They're really enjoyed by the people that enjoy them, but it's not for everybody. But this one has been a real breakout hit. Really intriguing, dark, dark art. A vampire story that we haven't really seen before. It's not Twilight vampires. It's not so much classic Bela Lugosi-type vampires. It's a different vampire. And the story with his beloved trying to take over the world and him trying to stop her. The one thing I did enjoy was Batman taking on the main vampire, and basically, you know, the vampire wanting to talk and Batman just going, "Oh, you're a vampire? Okay, then I have to stop you." And the vampire kind of, I'm sorry, I forget his name. The vampire kind of saying, "You know, I like you for your tenacity." So it's interesting. This has been a good one, and now we're in Gotham, and we'll see where this goes. I think the next one has a cover of Batman fighting the vampires. So that's one. If you've been liking it, it's still good. If you haven't tried it, you might want to try it. I think it's been good stuff. Okay, back to Marvel. Punisher number 6. This is probably a little bit old, but it was in my bag to read. Been a kind of a different Punisher take. Almost a cross between the Max kind of Punisher and the Punisher we saw in the last series that turned into Frankencastle. Just good. Punisher got beat up. He had to go into hiding for 4 months to recover from his wounds that he still hasn't completely recovered from. You have the main character from the first one. Now she is out trying to right the murder of her entire wedding party at her wedding. Just, you know, a good, almost spy book told from two different sides. You have her story and his story kind of working seamlessly. And I didn't even realize until I got to the end that it was drawn by two different people, each one doing a different part of the story. I don't know if their styles are similar enough that I didn't notice, but I think it was really well done. So that's good stuff. We're at number 6, and I'm still hoping for more, so I'm not sure where the trade break is going to be on this one. But it's been good. Okay, this one's a little bit older, but was in my pile. Uncanny X-Force 19.1, The Age of Apocalypse Kickoff. An interesting book, only because it's an Age of Apocalypse story written by Rick Remender because it's in Uncanny X-Force, but David Laffam did the prior introduction in Point One and is going to be doing the regular series. So just kind of interesting that it was a different writer who's going to be doing the story doing this. You know, I didn't check. I'm wondering if it's going to be the same artist. It's Billy Tan, who has a fairly distinct style, which really works for this. I thought it was a really good story, and I know the people that have gotten it have thought it was good. I want to see more. My only concern is it didn't sell well. I ordered it X-Force numbers because it's an X-Force book, and it sold a lot less. And my concern, from my side of the counter, is how many people bought it because they're Age of Apocalypse fans and want to read the story, how many people bought it just because it was an Uncanny X-Force issue, and how many people are going to buy the Age of Apocalypse book based on it. It's one of those question mark ones, and I'm, you know, got to play it safe and not order a ton to have a ton for the shelf. So if it's something you're interested in, let me know, and I'll gladly hold it for you. But it's one of those where it didn't sell nearly as well as the standard Uncanny X-Force book. Let's see. I don't know if I have... Oh, there it is. Uncanny X-Force 20. Might as well keep going with this. Now, this one was very confusing to me. I know a lot of people had trouble with the art. I don't have a problem with Greg Ticini's art. I know he worked with Rick Remender on The Last Days of American Crime that I enjoyed. So there's nothing about the art that really bothered me. It is definitely a departure from, I think it was Opeña, who did the prior issues. But my problem with it, and it's funny as I talk to people about it, is I don't know Captain Britain. I know who he is. I understand that he's the brother of Psylocke and all of that. But all of a sudden they're bringing in all these Captain Britain family characters, and I'm just sitting here reading it going, I don't know who any of these people are. Some of the people I've talked to, like Jeremy, have said that it's from the old Excalibur book, which I never read. I tried, and some of them just seemed so goofy. Maybe I just wasn't in a goofy mood. I wanted something a little more, so I probably had all the issues at one point, but probably never read them. So basically, it's the trial of Phantom X for what he did in the first arc when he killed young... Apocalypse before he could grow up to destroy the world, and now he's being tried for killing a child. But like I say, some of the beats I'm just kind of, I guess I'm kind of missing, because I don't know who the people are, and I don't completely understand motivations and all that fun stuff. So I hope other people are enjoying it. I don't know if I would keep reading it based on the story arc if I wasn't a fan of the Captain Britain folk. I wonder if And my concern is that some people might kind of take it off and say, I'll wait for the next one to start. So I hope you don't do that, but if you do, I understand. Green Lantern number 5, kind of wrapping up the whole Green taking back Sinestro's planet from the Yellow Lanterns. And it has Sinestro creating rings for all of the... Darn it, what are their names? But introduces a new character, at least that I didn't know of, Arsona, who he tries to get to help them. They've been locked away in separate storage cells, but eventually they come out and they're able to destroy the Yellow Ring. It was good. I read it a while ago, and I honestly don't remember everything that happened in it. But yeah, it just kind of ends with Hal reconciling with Carol, and the Guardians... showing that they're going to be even a little bit more nefarious. So that one's... It's still been good. I feel it's gone down a little bit. I used to really, really, really look forward to Green Lantern. It was always a top book to read. And maybe it's just been going on too long. Just this kind of story, the Guardians... I don't know. Move on, since I'm doing such a good job expressing my opinions. Wonder Woman 5, I've been really enjoying this book. Number one, didn't really grab me. I wanted to like it, and it didn't seem like there was enough there. It was such a departure from anything we've read before. Wonder Woman was barely in it, introducing some new characters, but by now, to give everything away, it's been shown that Wonder Woman was not born of clay, that she was actually the daughter of Zeus. And Zeus's wife Hera has found out that her husband dilly-dallied and created Wonder Woman, so now she's angry and after Wonder Woman, and Wonder Woman's stepsister, Strife, is causing trouble, and in this one, we've been introduced to a new character by the name of, what was his name? Sorry, but he's a British character, and it's very interesting. He almost reads like... his name is Lennox. He almost reads like Ezreal is trying to do Hellblazer again. He's got that mysterious, I know more than you know, I'm not going to tell you everything I know, dropping little things you know, little hints and things to come. But the basic idea is at the end, we get to meet Lord Poseidon, and it's revealed that Zeus is dead and that all of the brothers are now going to be fighting for the heavens. So it's Hades and Poseidon and the others. So, yeah, so we get an appearance by Poseidon, and we also get an appearance by Hades by the end. So very interesting. And then Hera is still looking in, and it's been good. It's been fun. Boy, I'm not articulating myself well at all, but sorry. Uncanny X-Men. I read the last two issues back to back, and this is a lot better than I want to give it credit for. I think it's been very, very good. I wasn't a big fan when I kind of stopped reading Uncanny X-Men, the previous version, right after Messiah Complex, because I just didn't really care that much about Hope, and I know that next story arc was the Five Lights, and it just, I wasn't buying into the whole Hope thing, and I just kind of stopped reading it. And then it had the quarantine storyline with H1, X1 virus and things. So I didn't, I was kind of able to stay away from it. I didn't read the tie-ins to Fear Itself. So I'm coming at Uncanny X-Men, fresh from Schism. And I didn't like the whole Sinister thing. I'm not a big Mr. Sinister guy. He just seems almost too uber-powerful for my taste. Somebody who can take the head off a Celestial and repurpose it for his own needs, making it flying around and shooting people and things like that just seemed a little far-fetched. So that storyline really didn't grab me, and I didn't know if I'd keep going with it. But I said, okay, I like the flanks, or the phalanx. And so I decided to read this next one. It was interesting. It shows, basically, gives kind of the story of one of the phalanx and what happened to him and what Sinister did to him and his fight with the X-Men, and explained how Sinister was able to do some of what he did in the last couple issues. Then in number 5... I wonder how it reads if you didn't read Uncanny X-Force. Now, granted, Uncanny X-Force is my best-selling Marvel book, so I guess it's almost safe to say that if you're reading Uncanny X-Men, you're probably also reading Uncanny X-Force. But basically, in Uncanny X-Force, the last story arc was Apocalypse Angel wanted to rebuild the world with the Celestial Seed, which would basically burn the Earth to a crisp and then restart the whole planet. And he did a little test in this one area. And this is the X-Men going to this test area and seeing what happened. And lots of smiling people. Thank you, Greg Land. All the girls are always smiling. And Namor and Magneto are coming off as a little hornier than I ever remember them. But it was a good, enjoyable art, but yeah, also at the end it references Phantom X and the Archangel Apocalypse, and then we get introduced to a new character, the Immortal Man, who looks kind of like War Machine gone crazy. So that's been going well, and I'm definitely going to keep reading that. I just wish Greg Land would draw. Everybody shouldn't be smiling, but that's what he does. Avengers 21. I'm oddly enjoying all this Dark Avenger stuff. When they first announced it, I was kind of like, seriously? Didn't we already do this? But it's a new team, and adding in the fact that where they grabbed the Now, this one is more the... in New Avengers, they're fighting the actual new Dark Avengers. But in this one, it's kind of the other side of it, where Norman Osborn had somebody gathering DNA and all sorts of stuff, and they're kind of using that, where in this one, we have a bunch of... All of a sudden, these people who are Giant-Mans doing stuff, and there's little Ant-Mans doing stuff. So it's kind of interesting. It does have one of the things that drives me crazy with the Avengers for the longest time now, where the covers don't match the inside of the book. And normally, it's not a big deal. But there were a couple, back during Fear Itself, you had Hawkeye hugging Spider-Woman on the cover, and nothing of the sort happened inside. This one has Storm on the cover, lightning shooting out of her hands, and she's only, I believe, in one panel where she's already unconscious before we even get to her. Something happened last issue that knocked her out. And it's just kind of interesting where, you know, I don't necessarily need the cover to always represent what's inside, but it does help sell. Just to go off on a little bit of a tangent, it seems like both companies have kind of gotten away from that, where they're not using the cover to sell the book, which is how it used to be. I remember, you know, as a kid on the spinner rack, and you're looking at the books, and all of a sudden something would just grab your eye, and I have to read the story. I have to find out what happened. Well, this is just really just kind of a generic Storm standing on the cover, which would be really neat if you bought it to see Storm, but then you get inside and she's really not even in the book, which would be a little bit of a letdown. So I know in a sense it doesn't matter a whole lot. Most people are going to buy it regardless of the cover, but I wish the companies would get back to using the cover to actually sell the book. Put something on the cover to make that person go, ooh, I need to see what's going on here. I want to buy this. We haven't seen that for a while. But back to Avengers 21. The story was enjoyable. I'm liking the idea of them using these former Avengers powers like Black Goliath and Ant-Man and things to take out the Avengers. I think at the very end, you have Cap is actually captured. It was nice seeing Vision back. I can't remember Vision in a long time. I guess he hasn't been around until Tony Stark just was tinkering with him in the basement, which is probably the worst return of a character I've seen in a long time. I'm enjoying this, and I think this storyline has legs, which leads me to a little concern with Avengers versus X-Men, is I don't see how you can continue this story through that as well, unless, I don't know, everything would be kind of disjointed. So I'm assuming the Avengers books are going to tie in strongly with Avengers versus X-Men, but I'd love, you know, this is a storyline I'd like to read for the next 6-8 months. I think there's a lot of ways that they could build it, and there's a lot of ways they could go, and I hope it's not cut short just to tie into an event. I'll probably talk about that more later, as, you know, depending on who comes in as we're talking about events and things like that. Invincible Iron Man, this one is, it's been dropping sales-wise, scarily so, where Iron Man was really, really big, especially when he was running from Norman Osborn and then deleted his brain. I don't think it had anything to do with the movie. I think it was just a really good storyline. And since then, it's just kind of been going with no real direction. It tied in with Fear Itself for a while. And those were okay, but it was funny. I just had somebody buy like the last 5 or 6 issues, and looking at the covers, I'm like, wow, he was really making those weapons for a long time, because each issue had a picture of him making, you know, it was 4 or 5 issues that had the same cover of him making the weapons to defeat the Worthy. Not a bad issue, but one artistic thing I found was that the Mandarin looks exactly like Tony Stark, and I don't know how much LaRocca uses models, but as I was looking at the Mandarin, maybe it's just the lips, how he draws lips or something, but I noticed that basically take away the long hair and it's Tony Stark. It's a fine story. I wish they would expand Iron Man's rogues gallery. It just seems to be Mandarin and Stain. I've already seen these guys. Bring in somebody else. Let's do something new. But and Tony's he's being hunted by the military again, and it just seems like Fraction, I don't know if he doesn't want Iron Man to be comfortable. I really enjoyed those stories when Iron Man was head of S.H.I.E.L.D. I thought those were really fun, different stories. Even when he was head of S.H.I.E.L.D. and he was hunting the other Avengers, things like that, I found it really enjoyable. This one, him on the hunt, on the run again, it's almost a been there, done that kind of thing. So I hope it goes somewhere. I'll keep reading, but I know you guys, as the listeners and the buyers, it's probably down half of its sales from where it used to be. So I hope it picks back up. I hope we can get some more interest in it and get the sales back up to where they were. Because, you know, it's a great character, good writer. You know, it's been the same team for, you know, well, I don't know how many issues, not 512, but for quite a while. And I don't know if Fraction has too much on his plate, and he's just doing what he's comfortable and doing, I don't want to say easy, but I don't think he's really stretching himself to find new storylines for Iron Man at this point. Next up, Daredevil number 8. Now, Daredevil's been one of the most heralded of the new Marvel books. You know, Book of the Year, a lot of people are really raving about it. I've enjoyed it, but I have a long history with Daredevil, so that's not really a surprise that I'd find Daredevil fun. But this was part 2 of the Spider-Man story, which was neat. And the fact that you have Mark Waid has written Spider-Man before, so he's obviously comfortable with both characters, which was really a fun story with Daredevil and Spider-Man and Black Cat trying to find something. A great Paolo Rivera art. Just a couple questions. I think I mentioned them before, maybe at the other podcast when we were talking about Daredevil, was if you have this super powerful device that all the bad guys want, he seems to leave it in his desk drawer, which is kind of funny. But looks like we're going to be getting a lot more of that. We're going to be seeing a lot more of Black Cat, and definitely something's up. There's a side story with Foggy that involves his dad, so it's going to be interesting. It's been a really good book, and I hope it continues. My one question is, I wonder if in both Spider-Man and Daredevil they're going to reprint both sides of that story. I always wonder how they're going to print that when they do things like this. But overall, I thought it was really good. Then the last book in the stack here is Nightwing number 5. I've enjoyed Nightwing. It was kind of funny. I was talking with Joe online where Joe's really enjoying the sales numbers. And I just like to look. And the Beat over the last 2 days did the analysis of the December's numbers. And it was just funny looking and realizing that Nightwing is outselling Avengers. And that just kind of struck me as really odd. I mean, I could understand Batman or Detective maybe outselling Avengers, but not Nightwing, which would definitely, I think you'd have to put in as a B-list Batman book. So that was interesting to me. But the story's been good. The last issue, I think, was where they went to Florida, which seemed a bit of a tangent. It's almost like half the book is relevant, half isn't. Remember, he went to Florida with Batgirl, and that led to a conflict with the one girl from the circus that he's kind of reigniting a romance with. She got jealous of Batgirl. This one is almost two halves of a book, too. Two characters I don't really recall that all of a sudden we're getting into some, I don't know if it was voodoo or just all of a sudden she calls a demon down and you have Nightwing fighting a rhyming demon. Which, that's really not Nightwing's shtick. That's not what he does. It's not really the guy you'd pick if you had a demon coming along. So that story just seemed odd. Almost like half thrown in there. But the other half I thought was very good. It's explaining who the bad guy is, his ties to everything. You know, a big reveal on the last page that I won't give away. But overall, it's been a really good book. As you can tell, it's been selling well, not just for me, but nationally. So I've been enjoying it. I wish they'd stay a little more focused, but maybe it'll all come together. I'm not sure. I sure hope so. So that's it for now. We'll see if somebody comes in, and we'll sit and talk.
Okay, I have my first official guest here for my Saturday edition of the Red Chair Diary. Or no, Red Chair Dialogues. There we go. Adam's here. He's been here a while. It's been a much busier day than I anticipated, but we also didn't get the 2 inches of snow they called for. So, yeah, I'm happy not to have the snow. Yeah. So Adam said he had to come down. He had great important things that he wanted to talk about. So
I figured we'd talk about who would win in a fight between Batman and Metacat.
I don't want to talk about that stuff.
One thing that I've been excited for, though, that I've been thinking about a lot, though, is Ends of the Earth, which seems odd because I wasn't really big on...
Did that last issue of Spider-Man have anything to do with that? Because I haven't read that one yet.
Last issue.
It was the hand coming out of the ground, like at the newspaper thing.
Oh, no, I don't think. It's its own, like, little story that they have going on. I think that's what, it's one of these, like, fillers until they get to Ends of Earth.
Okay, so what's the Ends of the Earth about?
Supposedly, Ends of the Earth is about what they've been playing up since, I'm trying to think of when Doc Ock came back in. It was a little bit before Big Time. He's one of Spider-Man's villains that isn't totally superpowered. He just kind of has mechanical arms.
Okay, so it's filling. There was like a one issue before the Daredevil run. Was it after the Vulture thing or before the Vulture thing that kind of addressed that? I remember Doc Ock and the Secret Six or the Sinister Six.
Actually before that, before Big Time. You mean the issue that we just had recently?
Yeah.
No, Big Time, right before Big Time.
No, okay. Because I was saying Doc Ock appeared after Big Time.
Well, they had him before it in this Origin of the Species, okay, which introduces the baby Osborn.
Okay.
Who they named Stanley, which I find, you know, hilarious. That was a little bit of sarcasm.
I was not a big fan of Normie.
Normie's still around, though. Wherever he is. He was in that issue after Normie was in something dealing with the Molten Man after Brand New Day.
I remember that, yeah.
And, you know, he's kind of a nasty little kid.
Yes.
But, yeah, so now they introduced Doc Ock back into this in an issue. It might have been, like, an annual or something where he created these little mechanical spiders. And it was before...
Didn't Spider-Man use those in
Spider-Man? Yeah, which he used before. So, what was it? They were before Aunt May gets married to Jameson Sr., they had a... an issue where he goes, he uses the spiders and he kidnaps Aunt May because I guess he still likes her from that. Which
didn't they get married?
Well, they were going to get married in those issues, but if you remember that, he wasn't really in love with her. In that issue, which was what, 70 Spider-Man, he was using her, something dealing with like inheritance or something like that.
Using Aunt May.
Yeah, he was using
her. Wrong.
I just can't remember exactly how, because it's been a while since
why he got cancer.
Yes. No, why? Now, why he has cancer, supposedly. I guess it's cancer.
Isn't Tony Stark supposed to fix that?
Is because, and he didn't.
That guy. You can never count on Tony.
And I think Doc Ock used that in that Iron Man book as showing that, you know, not necessarily he knew he couldn't fix him, because he knew Doc Ock was smarter, so it was an ego thing. Which is kind of what they just did in the last issue of Spider-Man before this one that they have going on now. I think before the crossover between Daredevil.
Okay.
They had an issue where he's even smarter than MODOK.
Right, that's the issue I was talking about, where it was just kind of a one-shot.
Yeah. And weird. Then that looks like it's introduced what's happening, what's going to be happening with Ends of Earth, I think. One thing that I kept noticing is in that issue with MODOK, he sends MODOK build a machine that just basically teleports things and throws them out in the space.
Okay.
One thing that they did, somebody threw the wizard out into the space.
Okay. Okay, we're back. Slight customer interruption. Man, those guys.
Can't win.
But you were talking, so what's the Ends of the Earth going to be about? Do you know?
Supposedly, being that Doc Ock is so human, he's been hit so many times that he's developed, like, basically some sort of, like, tumor.
Right, right. That was all in the Iron Man storyline.
Yeah, and they're trying to, you know, he's wanting to, I don't know if he's just trying to do his most evil thing, though, before he dies or what, but mainly it's about him reforming the Sinister Six and, you know, doing his master plan, which you don't really know anything about that yet.
Kill Spider-Man. Right?
Which I'm going to say it probably
is. Go out on a limb?
Yes. So, but I'm just excited for it because, you know, I don't know. After it just seems like a cool story to tell. You know, when they change Doc Ock into something like this, it's a little bit different than what Doc Ock has always been. And you haven't seen him for a while. I mean, besides these small stories, you haven't really had him as a big bad villain. Neither
I miss
him.
The haircut. You know, he's got the little stubble now.
Yeah,
I always enjoyed the Mo haircut. So.
And now he's, which they showed you in Iron Man because they had the flashbacks.
Yeah.
But, I'm kind of excited for this book. I'm a little bit nervous, though, because of Spider Island, because I wasn't too thrilled about Spider Island. I think there was just, I don't know, I think there could have been a lot more to it, and there wasn't. I think that I had to do a little too much work to get into it. If there was something I didn't see,
I had to see it somewhere else. I found myself confused, like the big bad.
Yeah.
They kind of glossed over who she really was, and in the end, you know, it just kind of threw it together.
And then, you know,
the big thing that seemed to come out of it was just the return or Kane being healed.
Yeah.
So,
and that's the only thing that you really totally got out of that, and I think it had a lot of build up too. That was exciting. But
yeah, it did.
Once
and
you
it,
got into it, though, it just
it's another one of those that I think the editors got a little too crazy with. Where I think that would have been a nice Spider-Man story, but then they, you know, how many tie-ins, and not even just, you know, the tie-ins, like, I know people really like the Cloak and Dagger and the Shang-Chi, but there was the tie-ins that, you know, was the reprint of the origin of Hobgoblin.
Yeah.
that, you know, why did we have that? That,
yeah,
I love
and it
New
didn't
York.
Really, you know, have any, I think a lot of it is that, you know, they have brought a lot of good characters into this new Spider-Man. I think that's why Spider-Man's doing so well. They're bringing back old characters as new stuff, changing characters, doing different things. But I think they're doing so much of that, and a lot of that in Marvel itself, that they do something and then they let it sit for too long. You forget about that, and when it comes back in the picture, it seems irrelevant. Like,
yeah.
You don't even, you know, yeah. Like Mr. Negative.
Mm-hmm.
He was such a, you know,
neat character
that all of a sudden you're hardly seeing him, if you even see him at all.
Yeah, and that's something like we were talking about earlier today with, I forget who, about Avengers,
uh-huh.
Where, somebody was happy that Bendis was leaving the Avengers. And I was talking about, again, the Ultron storyline, and it's like, you know, this is one of his big stories he's been working on, and I just don't know when they're going to squeeze that
yeah.
in. It's like, it was a neat idea, and then they got, oh, well, we have to do this, and we have to do this.
And I think they're worrying too much about having to do the events, because it seems like I'm enjoying more that isn't an event than it is. I don't know where they're getting there, if they're doing, like, surveys or something to know what people
are. I think
are
they
reading.
Just look at sales when, you know, you have, you know, Fear Itself selling so much, and it's like, how do we not do this? That's 7 Fear Itself books. In
yeah.
this case, it was, what, 16 tie-ins? They said they're not doing the tie-ins
with
AVX. Which
might lead back to, you know, are people just getting them because they have to?
Yeah.
When they can take those issues and make so much more out of their
yeah.
books that they're doing
yeah.
right now, I think. So, but that's, you know, and I've seen that a lot. And it's not necessarily that I just don't like reading a lot of Marvel anymore. It's just I've been seeing that as a constant
yeah.
that they seem to be doing a lot of. And I think that's why I think a lot of it Marvel has to, you know, change just a little bit, maybe restructure just a little bit to accommodate for that.
Yeah. Okay, we're back. Poor Adam's been here for about 5 hours trying to talk. it's been a really busy Saturday, which is really good, but it's also been led me to have to think about how I'm going to go about doing this. It was funny, one thing I mentioned to him is I normally don't sit in the red chairs, so it's kind of fun looking at the store from this angle and just seeing things that, you know, I don't see on a daily basis. And one thing, I was looking at the new comic wall, or the new trade wall from New last week, and seeing some of the stuff that came out that looking at going, boy, I'd really like to read that, but, and like I'm looking at the Ultimate Hawkeye. And I know people told me that it tied into the Ultimate storyline, but I remember when number one came out and it was bagged, so I couldn't read it. And there was, you know, didn't read 2, 3, and 4 because of that. And now the hardcover's out, and it's also shrink-wrapped. So it's one of those, okay, it's really not worth it to me to unshrink-wrap it just for me to read it. I'm not that interested in reading it, but if since I took home all the Ultimate X-Men and the Ultimate stuff to read and get caught up on, and so now it's one of those, okay, I can wait for the paperback, which is going to be, you know, at least a month or two, and by then, how far out of touch is that going to be? Because that, like, again, tied in with the Ultimate stuff, we're going to be at issue, you know, 10 or 12 by then. Same thing with the Journey to Mystery. It's a hardcover, shrink-wrapped, so it's been talked up a lot lately. I know people are enjoying it. So now instead of being able to just read the graphic novel, I have to, you know, try to cobble together all the issues to read. And it just kind of brings up, Adam made the point, why do we really need a hardcover of Ultimate Comics Hawkeye? Looking at the DC trades that are coming out for the new 52, it's like they're doing the hardcovers for the big ones, the Justice League, Batman, Action, and the, you know, I don't want to say lesser ones, but things like, you know, Justice League Dark.
Because you're more
and,
basic books.
Yeah, makes more basic books don't need the hardcover treatment. Whereas Marvel, it seems like everything gets a hardcover, then a paperback.
Yeah.
Like, I'm looking even on what came out this week. I'm seeing Astonishing Spider-Man and Wolverine. How long ago was that?
Yeah.
And we're finally getting the paperback of it because we had the hardcover for a while.
Which
and
is kind of interesting because right next to it is Daredevil, which I think probably is something that would be cool being hardback. It has been a good run
right.
for it. I think that would sell better than something like
but,
Ultimate Comics Hawkeye.
Right. And for $20, and it's the first 6 issues, that's not bad.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good deal on that.
Yeah.
But it is also funny looking at some of the books that did come out. Or, yeah. know, like, so we got the hardcover of Captain America, which is good, but the hardcover of the second volume of Hickman's FF run. Well, yeah. You know, again, that's going to slow people reading it, you know, the people that are waiting. Yeah. And everything doesn't really need to be in a hardcover. No. So, luckily, Strike Force Moratori came out in paperback, yeah. So I can take that home and read that one, because
I really don't like it when they polybag or shrink wrap books, because I'm kind of going in blind when I...
Well, yeah, I mean, I understand the shrink wrapping on the hardcover, because it does protect the slip cover, and trust me, as I've seen so many DC ones since they decided to stop doing it. Now, not a lot, but... some of the oddball-sized ones, like Teen Titans Games, probably half of the ones I've gotten in them have been damaged, and it's just been a damage to the slipcover.
Yeah.
So.
Well, my biggest issue with trade paperbacks is sometimes they put a laminate on the front.
Yeah.
That bubbles.
That happens with IDW, where it starts to peel.
I had, when I was getting Ultimate X-Men.
Sorry, that high-pitched noise you're hearing is the sweeper from next door at the nail salon. Sorry. I don't think I can make that go away.
We can. Oh, no.
No.
I was getting Ultimate X-Men when I first started getting trades, and I got just one that had an issue with the whatever laminate they used, and it wasn't just the one book, like that one volume that I got. It was all of that volume. I think it was like four or five or something.
Okay.
And they all were really foggy looking.
Just a print.
And really bubbly, like, and they all started to peel at the edges. So I don't know if they've switched to that or what, because I haven't gotten too many books that have been like that lately. So I'm happy about that. I'm mainly a lot of these books that I'm looking at too. Like there's just some that you just look at and you're like, this really didn't need to be a hardcover.
Yeah. And that's one thing I don't know if we talked about it at the last podcast, but. They tend to they collect everything, and I've noticed DC does it too, but I've seen lately a lot are getting canceled. Maybe the order numbers aren't high enough for them to bother doing.
Yeah.
And it's little things. It's like the last run of Outsiders didn't get enough orders, and they said it's been canceled and will not be resolicited. So
I think it has to have kind of an epic run to become a hardcover. And I think some of these things, they just bring out hardcovers thinking that they're an epic run. And, like, even with Daredevil, I like Daredevil, but even that so much, I still don't know, you know, if I really want to get that.
Yeah.
It's been a good run, but to say it's been one of these things that has to be, like, bounded and hardcover,
you know, that should be a little more special.
Yeah. And I think that would help you sell different books because of that, because, you know, people are going to come in getting this really nice hardcover of a book that they really liked and they want to keep for a long time.
Yeah.
As opposed to just people that are just getting at the read. So, but yeah. There's a few like that, though. But,
it's also fun sitting here looking and seeing how I have the hardcover in one place and the paperback in another and really could save some space with that. But,
that's Jeremy.
That is Jeremy. Put him to work.
Oh, well.
Yeah, this didn't quite go as I'd planned, where we could just sit around and BS. We had pretty much people here all day, which, I'm not complaining about.
Yeah. And I don't mind being here.
Yeah, well, you have all those things to do.
I'm busy. I've got all sorts of, I'm all backed up on trades. I've read all my issues for this week, but with trades, I've just been really backed up lately.
I've been trying to pound through books. I took home like all the Ultimates, and it's like, for me, the sales have gone down, and I'm getting a lot of people tried it and didn't stick with it, and so I kind of want to read them all and be able to say, hey, this was really good. You guys might want to jump on it.
Yeah.
I read the first couple of each, but yeah, it didn't stick through.
One thing that keeps getting in the way, I just keep reading The Boys.
Yeah.
And because they're a really quick read.
Yeah. Can't fault you on reading those.
And they're fun. I gotta say, they're a fun book.
I thought it was funny, the Butcher Baker trade was in the current previews order that I just had to do on Thursday, and I ordered it at Walking Dead numbers of trades. So this kind of made me laugh, where most things I order one or two of. So it's just funny hitting double digits on a trade.
One thing I just got for me recently that I've been trying to read, I've never been able to read the Phoenix, Dark Phoenix saga.
Okay.
And I've really enjoyed that. I got the special anniversary edition. I think it was the 30th anniversary edition.
Yeah, the big fancy hardcover.
And I really like the hardcover too. Underneath the dust jacket, they have each side of the book has Dark Phoenix, and then the same symbol. It has the Phoenix symbol, and Dark Phoenix is in the middle. And then the other side is just Jean Grey. So it's kind of a reverse. Okay. But it has. It's been a really good collection. I've really enjoyed reading it.
Yeah, I hope that reprints the Phoenix one-shot they did after the fact.
Yeah, it looks like it does. Cool. And it has a what-if story in it.
Okay,
I think it's like a what-if. Cool. I don't remember. I think it's what-if she did destroy the Earth or something like that.
Yeah, I read that long ago.
But yeah, it's one thing that, and not too long ago on a podcast, we were all talking about, I think that was before Christmas, actually. It's been that long. Books that you just really wish that you've read, that everybody talks about, that you never have. I didn't really have one. Then walking through the store, I said, I never read Dark Phoenix. And then Jeremy pointed that out. He's like, oh, you got to read Dark Phoenix. So I said, you know what? I'm going to read it.
Yeah, I still got to do House of M and Morrison's X-Men. Those are my two
I never read Morrison's regrets. X-Men.
I haven't read those yet.
But House of M is a... I never can play down House of M. And I'm so on Bendis usually, but I liked a lot of earlier stuff. Like, I was always a fan of Ultimate Spider-Man.
I just remember I didn't like the covers.
Of Ultimate Spider-Man?
No, of House of M.
House of M,
so I know that's a very weird
they had
reason
a lot
not
of covers
to have read
that.
Something.
Didn't they have variants?
Yeah, but it was like a painted cover.
Like
odd,
a painted kind of cover.
And I never grabbed it.
I always like the one that has the group shot. Now, I forget who drew that. I think he's thinking it was...
That was like on a sampler or something. Yeah. I remember getting that. That was a little free zero issue type thing.
It was
thing.
Neat seeing all the different characters that they have in it. But
Finch or Hitch or...
Yeah. I think it was Finch.
One of those guys, yeah.
Because a lot of his faces on people look alike.
Okay.
I've always noticed. They always have that same face. And he was also doing... I'm pretty sure he was doing Disassembled Avengers at that time,
okay.
I think. So they might have just kept that same, because those were basically, that's a sequel of Disassembled. Yeah, but that's always a good book. I've always figured it as being kind of like the same
just
way.
Just saying, Avengers Disassembled, isn't that when Hawkeye and Vision died?
Yeah, that's exactly.
They got better. Yeah.
So did Scott Lang, supposedly.
Yeah, has he been back yet? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what about Jack of Hearts? Didn't he?
Jack of Hearts?
Didn't he die in that?
Yeah. He died in that.
He was the one that came in and exploded and killed everybody.
He's the one who killed Scott Lang. Killed Scott Lang.
So we're due for a revival of him, although I know he was in one of the last Marvel Zombies books.
Well, you can actually see Scott Lang right now in this whole storyline that's going on, and it's been going on for a while now, all year, basically, is Children's Crusade.
Oh, okay.
So you're
I'm waiting for that to end before I read it.
Yeah.
So.
It's actually, I think that's a good way of reading it, though, to tell you the truth.
Well, for me, anytime I see something that's going to be bi-monthly or erratically scheduled, I just, I'm not saying I read more than anybody else. I'm sure Nick reads more than all of us, but just trying to keep a storyline in my head can get overwhelming.
Well, it is, but it is a good story. I think if the whole, like, reading that at the same time and reading Fear Itself, I really like that as an event better than I did. I think it's also a lot of my reason why I don't, you know, get too much into Marvel events is because they tie into so much. This book has nothing to tie into, and I think it's a fun read because of that. And it has so many characters to it.
Okay.
So many characters you haven't seen for a while. You know, he's writing for both the X-Men, you know, dialogue between the X-Men, the Avengers, the Young Avengers. You got, you know, all sorts of characters. You got past characters, you know. You got Doctor Doom in there. You got a whole bunch of people. It's basically a third part, basically, of House of M, because it's that story that, you know, you haven't seen. What happens to the Scarlet Witch? Where's she been? You know. Okay. Stuff like that.
Well, so we're going to need to know soon.
Yeah, I know.
Avengers versus X-Men.
That story needs to end if that's going to be what it is. So. But I think that's why I'm really kind of excited for Avengers versus X-Men, if it's going to be, you know, about that type of thing. Because it's one of those things that you've been questioning. Those two things were really good stories. House of M and Disassembled were good stories. And, you know, it's something that was never addressed or never ended. Which is a thing with a lot of Marvel stories. Nothing's totally has actually ended. It just leads into a new thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember when I asked Fraction about the Fear itself, does it have an end? Yes, it does. And that was just funny, getting those point one issues and then the lead-ins to Defenders and everything, and it was just kind of funny. I mean, they did kind of end, but, you know, what was the final fate of, you know, Bucky? Well, he gets his own book that comes out next week. Woo-hoo. Yeah. somehow I missed reading the preview of it, if there even was a preview of it on my Marvel retailer website. So,
oh, really?
I haven't read it yet.
Somebody had it on Twitter when I was reading. I don't know who it was, but they were talking about they just previewed it, so they might have something somewhere.
They might have a preview, couple pages up.
Yeah, but somewhere. I've always liked the idea of Winter Soldier bringing back Bucky, so I'm kind of excited for that book. So that's probably something I'll add on to.
Well, it's funny, when I saw them riding off on the motorcycle, I immediately thought of Nomad, which was a big book in the early 90s, where he had the kid on his back and stuff. So I wonder if he'll get a kid along the way. but yeah, and then Iron Man was okay the way they ended it, although it kind of undid any drama from his. And then you had the Thor thing that I'm trying to have at home to try to read all that Journey into Mystery. And then I was going to read the last couple issues of Thor just to see what's going on with Tanneris and all that. Just... I feel bad that I don't read it, and I think I have about 6 inches worth of books at home to read, and yeah, I'm going to get that all read tonight. But it's always a goal.
That was the only point issue that I actually liked, I think, because of the Winter Soldier, was the Captain America one.
Yeah, I know Matt,
I think that was the only one that I really just was like, okay, this had a reason. You know, this that led on to something. They had a way of bringing back Cap, which I don't know if it was the best way of bringing back Captain America.
But
they did it, and but it led into this new book, which I think Ed Brubaker, Ed Brubaker kind of created Winter Soldier. I think it's going to be interesting just to read this.
It'll be interesting to see if he focuses on this and kind of gives up the two Cap books. Well, we know we're giving up Captain Bucky's ending to become Captain Hawkeye.
Is he writing Captain Hawkeye?
No, that's going to be Cullen Bunn.
Is it keeping the Captain America numbering? Like Captain,
I don't know. Since we'll know next week when we get the previews.
Okay.
And then I know he's been doing Captain America, but I wonder how long he'll keep doing that book.
Yeah.
Well,
and I don't think the last arc was very well received, though.
Received? How about received?
Received. Received.
No, it wasn't. I mean, part of the problem might have been the delay. Part of the problem was it was just kind of wacky. It was, alternate reality Cap, introducing characters that had never been mentioned before.
Yeah.
I guess that was part of my problem, that you came from the movie in here that launched then, and it was just really odd for everybody. New people, I don't know if they could get a grasp on it, trying that, and then the people who liked it, trying it. It was just a really weird story. I haven't read the last one that came out.
Yeah.
I read the first part of it, Cap and Hawkeye, where they face the Mad Bomb, and Cap like aged at the end. But then when the new one came out, I haven't grabbed that one.
I didn't mind that one as much as the first arc, mainly because it connected into that Super Soldier book. That's basically just leading right into that. So that kind of I understood what was going on. The whole thing with the first arc, though, with as you said, all those characters that they introduced and stuff.
Part of what confused me is you have Madame Hydra and that had Queen Hydra.
Yeah,
it's just I guess maybe I need a flow chart of the hierarchy of Hydra.
Of Hydra, yeah, because I still don't know.
But aren't they all now working with Norman Osborn?
I only divisions of them. Is what's his name, Baron
Strucker?
Yeah, is he still running anything?
Mm-hmm. Didn't Nick Fury kill him at the end of Secret Warriors?
That might be.
That was a good book.
But as you were saying, though, about characters, though, I remember somebody just brought this up recently. I don't remember who, but they said, how many characters from Captain America's past survived?
Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, it's like everybody. Yeah. Bucky, they all were frozen in time for some reason. So, I don't know, but I think that's why Captain America has such a rough rogues gallery, though, because, everybody he had was dead.
Yeah.
Should be dead.
But it's kind of funny, because you figure when Cap came back in, what was that, 63, 64, it had only been 20 years.
Yeah.
Or, less than 20 years from when he got frozen, so it wasn't that big a deal, where now we're talking...
Now it's different.
Yeah, now we're getting it 70 years.
And... Which really makes me question X-Men. In X-Men, was Magneto... in the comic books. I know in the movie he was. Right. Was he in a concentration camp?
He was. You know, and I never read that. I know people talk really glowingly of that Magneto miniseries they had before.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of it. I remember not reading it, just going, you know, at the time, it's just like, I'm not up for a concentration camp story. I'm not...
Well, the whole concentration camp thing is really going to set that comic off in the future, though, because... How old is he going to be that he's going to be able to, when he was a kid, be in a concentration camp? That's one of those things of comic book aging, though, that I think it's really hard to write around, you know?
That's one of the hard things with the Marvel specifically. DC, their characters' origins rarely, you know, it was very, when you didn't have a real city, you didn't have a real time.
Yeah, exactly.
Things like that. You know, just because Batman was seeing the mark of Zorro when his parents were killed, you know, that could have been a revival. You don't know.
Yeah.
Whereas Marvel, you know, they had to, that was the whole point of the Ultimate Universe, to update things because, you know, the Fantastic Four were racing the Russians into space. Well, that doesn't mean anything now.
It doesn't.
Spider-Man, I guess not so much.
And they changed that completely with the Ultimates. Ultimate Fantastic Four, it was like some sort of portal they were creating, I think to the Negative Zone or something like that. So, yeah, they really changed that. But, yeah, that makes it really hard with Marvel. Because, it's always centered, and Marvel's always centered around New York a lot of the time, as opposed to Metropolis, Gotham City.
Keystone City, Coast City.
Yeah. All these cities that, now the only hard thing about that is people try to picture where these cities are in the country.
Right.
And that's kind of a difficult part. I'm pretty sure they've mentioned the Coast City is in California.
I think San Diego,
Yeah. And Metropolis is always on the East Coast.
Yeah, Keystone City.
And Gotham City is.
Yeah, Philly or Pittsburgh. I never really thought too much about it. Not growing up here, you know, Central City, I always guessed was Chicago.
Really? I kind of always thought that, too, because I always thought it was a...
Yeah, but Keystone City, you know, I never gave it a whole lot of thought.
Actually, Metropolis was always the hardest to know where it was.
I remember when somebody said, I read something where they said it was Toronto. I'm like...
That's odd.
That seems really odd.
Yeah. I always... Well, Smallville is what throws that off.
Right.
Because Smallville is in Kansas.
Right.
Yeah. And you always thought that Smallville was just, you know, a rural area.
Well, I always assumed Metropolis was New York, but then you also had Gotham was New York. And I remember reading something else where somebody said, well, no, that's New Jersey. Sorry, New Jersey people.
then that really threw me.
Or Gotham could be Boston, just... Distance-wise, I kind of get the impression that it's near Metropolis, but not.
Well, it's got to be it's got to be right on the coast.
Yeah.
So that's why I think a lot of people thought New York City.
This is where we need Nick. Yeah. Where we can get Nick to Skype in.
Yeah, we need Nick for this one.
No, my iPad's far, far away.
Ah. We can always use your phone.
Oh, that's true.
Get the Skype out. Oh yeah, but yeah, that's. I don't know. It's always been difficult in that reason, but you can write around that though. You know, you can't, it's really hard because I think that's the hardest character that I think they're going to have later down the road is Magneto. Unless they just not bring up
Magneto. His origin, but that was such
a part of
his origin.
That's such
a
big part of who he was that you can't do that. Yeah. So I think that's going to be a difficult one down the road, Magneto. I always thought it was difficult in the movie because they aged him a lot in the movie. He was played by, I can't remember the guy's name. McClellan, And, so, you know, I don't really know what's going to happen with that, but makes sense in the new movies, though.
I didn't watch the
new X-Men, because they even
maybe I'll watch that tonight while I get caught up on all my comics, and I also need to price some stuff. Yeah.
Do it all.
God, I need more time.
Multitasking. Yeah, but they really did a good job with the, because they with those two movies, with the old X-Men movies that you had, but with Bryan Singer and this new one that just came out, they're in a way tying them together. This is just how Xavier started the school. They did a good job with doing that because they timed the movie takes place actually during the Cold War. So it kind of does make sense for
Magneto. But even that is going to date it.
Mm. Yeah. But later on down the road, that's one that's just going to age pretty quick. So, but yeah. So I don't know. I'm lost here.
I don't know. Well, I think, it's about that time. I got to start closing up. It takes so long for me to close up.
We didn't get Ryan.
No, Ryan said he's going to come next week. So shout out, Ryan. You're still a punk. And Well, we'll see what this brings. We'll talk at you Wednesday, and we'll see if this actually goes anywhere. See ya.
Shipwreck train.